Welcome everyone to a conversation with Meretz Chair Zahava Galon, ahead of Israel's November 1st elections, crucial November 1st elections, I should add. Hi everyone in the US, Israel, Palestine, other places in the world tuning in. We're in the week of Sukkot. So I want to wish a Modim L'Simcha to all who observe or continue to Chag Sameach for those who observe the two-day tradition. This is the latest in Partners for Progressive Israel webinar series. My name is Ron Skolnick. I organize these webinars on behalf of Partners for Progressive Israel. Before I hand it over to today's discussion moderator, I'll just note that Partners for Progressive Israel is an American not-for-profit. It's dedicated to the achievement of a durable and just peace between Israel and its neighbors, and that includes an end to Israel's occupation now in its 56th year. Partner supports Israelis working to ensure social justice, civil rights, Jewish-Arab partnership, and equality for all of Israel's inhabitants. And the organization wishes to deepen Americans' understanding of the complexities in Israel and Palestine so that they can better advocate for a progressive future for all inhabitants of the region. Now, Partners is pleased to be bringing this webinar to all of you for free. But if you enjoy it and want more programming like it, please feel free to make a contribution at progressiveisrael.org. One quick note about upcoming programming. Starting on October 23rd and running through December 18th, over 7 Sundays, Partners for Progressive Israel will be holding its annual Israel-Palestine Symposium. And once again this year, that's going to be done online. This year's program is called The Struggle for Human Rights, From Declaration to Occupation. And you can find details at progressiveisrael.org, and there'll also be a direct link that will go in the chat. And starting later this week, you'll also be able to register for individual sessions rather than just for the entire package. So it's a wonderful program, and I encourage people to check that out. Just a note about the chat and the Q&A. The chat will be open during this event, but if you have questions, please make sure to put those in the Q&A. The chat will not be monitored. So questions for the Q&A and chat as you feel free. I'm also told that we're joined today by a healthy contingent of friends from the World Union of Meretz, led by Dora Morag. Having said that, let me introduce our featured speaker today. And our interviewer. First of all, Zahava Galon. Zahava Galon is the chair of the Meretz Party. It's actually her second tenure as chair after previously heading the party between 2012 and 18. Starting in 1999, Galon served as a member of Knesset and was a Knesset member for 16 years. Between 2018 and 22, she was a regular columnist for Haaretz newspaper and a frequent media commentator on political and human rights affairs. She also founded during that time the Zulat Institute for Equality and Human Rights, which is an activist think tank that has been seeking to restore public legitimacy to the equality and human rights issues in Israeli society. But many of you might know her from a few decades ago in 1989, when she also was one of the founders of the Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem and was its first executive director. Zahava Galon, as many of you know, is viewed by many as the woman who most personifies the Israeli left. And under her leadership, Meretz became the party most identified with the struggle for human rights, women's rights, minority rights, and social rights. Galon has also been a leading voice in the struggle against religious coercion, and of course, an advocate to end Israel's occupation. For the sake of brevity, I have a whole list of awards that Zahava Galon has received. There'll be a link for the full bio also in the chat. I'll just note that Galon was born in 1956 in the Soviet Union and immigrated with her family at the age of 4, immigrated to Israel, of course. She holds a bachelor's in special education from Beit Berel College, a master's in philosophy from the Hebrew University, and has completed her coursework towards her PhD in gender studies at Bar-Ilan University. Gili Getz is our interviewer today. He is an American Israeli, or Israeli-American, as you'd say, photojournalist, actor, and activist. He served as a military photographer for the Israeli Army and as a news editor for Ynet United States. His work in recent years has been focusing on American Jewish political activism. He's also published regularly in Jewish and Israeli press, and his one-man play, The Forbidden Conversation, explores the challenges around the conversation about Israel-Palestine in the American Jewish community. Gili proudly serves on the boards of both the American Friends of Combatants for Peace and Partners for Progressive Israel. Now let me hand things over to Gili. I'll be back at the end to wrap things up, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you, Zahava. Thank you, Gili.
Thank you so much, Ron, and thank you everybody for joining us today, and Chag Sameach, and Shalom Zahava, and Chag Sameach, Chag Sukkot Sameach to you. It is so good to have you. I'm such a big fan of yours, and I think you are a great inspiration for all of us here in PPI, fighting for Israeli democracy, women's rights, pluralism, against the occupation, for Palestinian rights, just to name a few of the issues you championed. And now you're back. You're elected in a big decisive majority of Meretz primary voters to lead the party once again in one of the most consequential elections in Israel's history. I'll give a little framing about the political moment we're in, and then we'll get to a conversation about a lot of different issues. So on November 1st, in 3 weeks, Israelis are going to the polls for the fifth election in less than 4 years, following a political deadlock over Netanyahu's efforts to stay in power. The rise of Putinism, as President Obama called it, which revealed in the last documents, referring to Netanyahu, Trump, Orban, Erdogan, poses a significant threat to Israeli democracy. If, as the poll predicts, the pro-Netanyahu bloc that is now mainstream Kahanism and anti-democratic authoritarian politics fails to get 61 seats, which is likely to happen, we don't know, but then the anti-Netanyahu change government led by Prime Minister Yair Lapid will face the task of negotiating a very diverse coalition to prevent Netanyahu, who is currently under corruption trial and possibly jail time, from taking power and prevent the sixth election, which is a very unpopular option for the vast majority of Israelis. So, Zahava, maybe the first question I want to ask you is about your decision to come back and lead the party. You kind of stepped out of electoral politics and started a think tank, and kind of your thinking about this moment, jumping right in and leading the Meretz party in these very critical political times.
Thank you very much, Gili. Thank you all, everyone here, for having me here. And really, I don't believe it that I jumped again to the political arena because, you know, after 16 years being a member of parliament, I was so happy, let's say, in the civil society. I started in the civil society, you know, as Ron mentioned, I established B'Tselem, and then I joined the Meretz party. I used to be the executive director of Meretz, and then a member of parliament, and then the head of the Meretz party, and then I established again a new institute in the civil society. So I have six grandsons, so I was really happy with my life. And really, I didn't believe that I'll come back, but I was really, really very concerned about the fact that for more than 2 months, or maybe even more, Meretz was under the threshold. And it was a kind of a dangerous situation that Meretz might not be in the Knesset, that the left wing in Israel won't be represented in the Knesset. So in the media, there were many articles and many conversations about the fact that I'm the only one that can save Meretz. There were some polls that show that I can, you know, bring back the leftists that left Meretz, and they were part of them. They joined the Labour Party or Yesh Atid. So I didn't know what to do, but my family, you know, I wasn't sure that this is the right way for me, but my family said, you won't be able sitting, you know, at your home and not to join the party, because I used to help every time to Meretz to, you know, to gain more seats. But so I'm here, you know, we have our internal elections. I succeeded to win, and now my life is a mess. I don't know even how to explain it. We have so many things to combat against them. You know, first of all, my mission or my goal is to make Meretz a bigger party, to empower Meretz. Today we have six seats in the Knesset, but now in the polls we have between 5 to 6 seats. So I would like to have, let's say, even 7 seats in the parliament in order to allow Nitzan Horowitz, that used to be the head of the Meretz party, to join the Knesset, because now he's number 7. So this is one goal. So to empower Meretz, but I think that my main goal is to be part of the pro-democratic bloc. And it means that if Meretz has six seats, we have 61. It means that Netanyahu and his bloc, the Kahanist bloc, is out of power. So first of all, to empower Meretz, then to be part of the bloc of change, you know, the government of change. And I believe that the fact that, you know, I know most of the members of parliament, most of the heads of the Arab parties, the religious parties, and others. So I think that my connections with all of them can bring them to be part of the new government. So I see my mission also is to form the government for Lapid. What does it mean? Last time, last elections, Lapid formed the government for Bennett. This time, I believe that this is my mission because of my relations with the Arab parties. And I can't accept the fact that the Arab parties are excluded from the game, you know. And I believe that I can convince them to, if they pass the threshold. I believe that they would pass the threshold, but I think that my mission is to bring them to the government of change and to have a pro-democratic bloc, a normal bloc against those crazy people that want to be in power.
And creating that bloc will be extremely difficult because there is, like you're saying, there is a culture in Israeli politics where Arab parties, especially the joint list now broken into Hadash and Tal, are not legitimate partners. And some of the people in the future coalition in the anti-Bibi bloc do hold those views, and that's what Israeli democracy needs to overcome and strengthen. Is break of that culture. And I wanted to ask you specifically about that. This coalition, current coalition, has collapsed over a vote of the settler law, a law that allows Jewish settlers to live under civilian law while Palestinians in the occupied territories live under military law. And in the dramatic end of this governing coalition with the defections from Bennett's party, Ner Orbach famously said this partnership with Arabs have failed because they wouldn't vote to uphold the occupation in this sense. A little bit of your thought about how such a coalition can bridge such divides. I know most Israeli society does not vote over the occupation. It's not an issue that they are concerned with. Meretz has been leading over this issue, and the Meretz primary has elected Mosi Raz for second place, which is very vocal against the occupation. But the occupation itself plays in Israeli politics, even if the public is not. It's not the issue that motivates them. Can you speak a little bit about your thoughts about the difficulty around these challenging topics?
Well, I think that Member of Parliament, Nir Orbach, that you just mentioned him, I think that he was mistaken. I think that the fact that an Arab party, Ram, although a religious party, was part of the government, I think it has a tremendous implications of the way that the Israeli public, most of them, see the Arabs. And since I was elected to my... how do you say that, to my second
chairmanship,
I was interviewed many, many times, and I said that I can't stand the fact that the parties in my bloc, that they delegitimize the Arabs party. I can't stand that. And I think that we knew when we joined the government that it's not going to be Meretz's government. It's going to be a very complicated government. But I think that now we won't have Ayelet Shaked and Bennett. We won't have them. And I think there is a chance for people that although now during the election campaign, they announced that they won't be in the same government together with Ahmed Tibi and Ayman Ode. I think that after the elections, all of us will have to calculate the new situation, you know, and to take into consideration who are the partners, you know, and how to form a government. And even though that now they announced that they won't be together with the Arab parties, I think that after the elections, I will have to negotiate with them and to explain them that what's going to be is we'll have to choose between two options, whether the pro-democratic bloc is going to be in power, or whether Netanyahu, Ben-Gvir, Smotrich, all those in Hebrew we say, Kol ha-mera'im bishin, how do you translate it? I don't know. it's not in Hebrew, it's Aramaic. You know, all these Kahanist, fascist people, I would say. So, and also it's more than that. I think it's about time to understand that the Arabs are 20% of the population. And we in Meretz, we believe that the state of Israel is the state of the Jewish people, but also the state of all of its citizens. So we have to understand that they are not going to evaporate, you know, litadot, is it the right way to say it?
Evaporate.
To evaporate, they're not going to evaporate, and we have to live together, and we have to combine forces, and we have to work together in order to promote equality, civil equality for Israeli Arab citizens, and equality for the Palestinians in the territories. And after 55 years of occupation, our role in the government, although the right wing in the government, they don't have the same views that we have. But I must say that I was very, I don't know if to say enthusiastic was the right way, but I was very happy that Prime Minister Lapid, in his speech in the UN, said that there is hope for peace, and still the two-state solution is available. So I don't think it's going to be tomorrow morning, but I believe that if Meretz will be strong enough and will be part of the government, and I'm the head of the Meretz party, I think that our goal is to push, to push Lapid in order to start negotiations with Abu Mazen. I criticized him. I said that it's very nice that he said that there is a need for two-state solution, but I believe that he needs to meet with Abu Mazen. I know that there is a lot of critics against Abu Mazen, but still he is the head of the Palestinian Authority. I'm not going to choose for them who is the person to negotiate. So I think that we have really, it's a very unique or a rare moment that Meretz in the government can raise issues regarding the settlers, regarding the Palestinians, and regarding the peace process. So, and I would like to say, and I know, unfortunately, it's not going to be Gal'on's government, unfortunately. But I'm realistic and I understand the situation, but I know that our job is to balance the government between the people that in the right wing, in the center, we're in the left, you know, we're in the left, and then all of them are centrist or let's say right wing, light right wing. So we are the only leftist in the government. And if we be strong enough, we can make it.
Thank you. I would want to see a Gallon government. I imagine it. That would be a wonderful thing. So just to follow up on, you know, the current government had a coalition with the Arabs, with the Ram, and a variety, obviously Bennett, and it agreed on some sort of status quo, and it did deliver for the Israeli public many things, obviously not as much as we want, but on one topic, which is the occupation, it got much worse. So more home demolitions, more evictions, especially in Safariata, where whole communities are threatened with evictions, more raids, more violence, more settler violence. So we saw increase in almost every category when it comes to the occupation, in terms of collective punishment, you came out against all these measures, even though it was supposed to be a coalition where all sides should be sensitive to other criteria. So the question to you is, how do you think about it going forward on this particular issue?
I think that in a way we failed. We failed because we didn't succeed to impose on the government, on the Minister of Defense, and on the Prime Minister, it used to be Bennett, the Prime Minister. We didn't succeed to impose our, let's say, our beliefs. We knew that we are not going to succeed, but we expected that at least there will be a kind of a balance, you know, that the army would act against the settlers that beat Palestinians, that try to deport them. And, you know, we failed in a way. And we're very afraid that we would be blamed as the one that שיפלנו את הממשלה, that we were the one that, exactly. So we're very concerned about it. So we agreed to do some things that, you know, so I think that the situation right now is different. First of all, you know, Meretz joined the government after 20 years in the opposition. It was a huge success of Nitzan Horowitz by taking Meretz into the government. We were new, we didn't know exactly how to handle it. But now we are clever enough, you know, we have the experience and we have our views. You know, as I said at the beginning, my mission is to be part of the government in order to balance the government. But I know very well, I don't want to, you know, now to draw red lines. I think it's stupid to draw, you know, to draw red lines. But Yair Lapid and Benny Gantz, I met with them, as both of them. They know very well my ideas. And if they don't know, and if they didn't hear me speaking about them, they read me, you know, they read what I criticized them a lot. And I try to promote our ideas. So I think they know exactly who is the, עם איזה קלה הם מתחתנים, who is the...
who's the bride?
Yeah, who is the bride, you know. So, I hope that I can, with all my friends, you know, we have a great, I would like to emphasize, we have a great list. We have 10 people in our list that Mossi Raz, Michal Rozin, Ali Salalcha, he's a member of parliament from Bejan, he's Drum. And we have Gabi Lasky, you know, we have people that are committed to the struggle against the occupation. And more than that, we have, in general, we have 4 Arabs in out of 10 people.
First 10.
In Yes, the first thing. So just imagine that if we join the government, so there is a kind, you know, the Norwegian law, as we call it.
Yep.
So it will allow us, if we be ministers, so it will allow us to resign from the Knesset, and the Arabs will join the government, the Knesset. So it's a sensation, you know. So it's a Jewish Arab party, as I call it, an Israeli party with Jews and Arabs together, 4 out of 10. It's amazing.
So I have a complicated question for you. It's how does one build a space? And we struggle this in America, and we really look to Israelis for advice on this. How do you, you know, structure a space that is welcoming to Zionism? Of course, Zionists is as the party's Zionist and non-Zionist, which Palestinians are not. Palestinians are not Zionist. They look at it differently. They have a different perspective on it. And a partnership is really creating a space where you have space for these different types of experiences of people when you work together. So if you have any thoughts on that, it's an issue it's very hard to navigate, I know.
Yes, I have a lot of thoughts, because we have really a debate during our internal election a campaign about this issue. And I said very clearly and very loudly, and I'm going to say it here, I'm the head of Meretz. Meretz is an Israeli party. We have Zionists like myself, like Jumesh, Shulamit Aloni, Yossi Sarid, the leaders of Meretz, they used to consider themselves as Zionist, but we have also Arab citizens. So I can't force them to consider themselves as Zionist. It's not reasonable, you know. Yes. So I think that because we consider Meretz, consider the state of Israel as the state of the Jewish people, but also of all of its citizens, it means that we are an Israeli party with Zionists. All of us are Israelis, Zionist Jews and Arabs, that I can't imagine that they consider themselves Zionists. And I think it's okay. And I think that we can live together and cooperate together regarding civil equality. This is our mission, you know, that the Arab people, that the Arabs in Israel will feel as equal. And now they're still facing delegitimization, and they are still facing less resources from the government and everything. You know, almost every day I have meetings,
home campaign meetings.
Yes, home campaign meetings in different Arab villages, and I hear the people, and I can understand their frustration. They are so fed up with promises, and you know, so they would like to be partners, equal partners. They would like that we would learn their narrative, and I would like that they will learn our narrative, and we'll know how to cooperate together, how to integrate, how to live together, and not to exclude them and not to treat them as enemies, as Netanyahu used to consider them for so many years.
Thank you. So we have a lot of questions, and people still keep putting the questions up. I'll try to integrate them as we speak. But the thing that comes the most, and something you've been extremely vocal about, and Meretz, I think, is leading, is the rise of Kahanism and fascism and Jewish supremacy in Israeli politics, in Israeli society. It's growing. Obviously, Netanyahu has normalized it and mainstreamed it, just like Trump did here with white supremacy, where it's now a acute problem. I mean, it is frightening for us to look at this from here, and you've been extremely vocal, warning the public against this. Can you talk a little bit about this trend? We also have a question about the rising support of young people for this type of kind of fascist, neo-fascist type of politics. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes.
And how we combat that?
You know, the right wing, you know, they condemned us because of saying that we belong to the camp. We call it in Hebrew, Rak lo Bibi, you know, just not Bibi. So I was interviewed today and the journalist asked me, what does it mean, Rak lo Bibi, just no Bibi? So I said, it's much more than Bibi the person, you know. It's a whole ideology. We have a whole agenda. It means that we're against Bibi and his bloc, because people like Ben-Gvir and people like Smotrich, they're the only thing that they care about is Jewish supremacy and a Jewish arrogance, אפשר להגיד, דהירות יהודית, יהירות, you know?
Arrogancy, yeah.
Arrogance, you know, Jewish supremacy, but it's, you know, it's Jewish arrogancy. And they would like us not to be here. I would like to tell you a story, please. And then I'll continue. I drive, you know, with my car. And I heard Ben-Gvir was interviewed. I heard him, and he said, "I would like if I would be elected and I would be a minister in the government, I would like to establish a new ministry, for Idud Hagira, a deportation to encourage deportation." So the journalist asked him, what does it mean? Who is going to be deported? So he said, the Arabs, the leftists, we'll see. So he asked him, how are you going to deport them? What does it mean? So he said, who is buses, rakavot,
trains,
metosim, ere. So, you know, I thought, I wasn't sure that it's real, you know, and it was real. And this is their agenda. They don't like Arabs. They don't like leftists. They're against them. They would like to have the greater Israel, you know, and they would like to have a clean state from Arabs. And when we say Rak lo Bibi, just not Bibi, we mean that we're against those people that they want to change them, the shitat ha-mishtar,
the system of government.
The system of government. They would like a government that the Torah is the law, you know, Torata Chukata, you know, that the government is that the Torah is the law. They don't believe in the...
A theocratic structure, basically.
A theocratic structure, a theocratic state. They don't believe in democracy. They would like to take democracy in order to promote their agenda, but they are against democracy by trying to change the structure of the way that we are, you know, they would like to crush the gatekeepers. They would like to crush the economic system. They would like to crush the judges, everything, in order to promote their way of thinking, you know. So I think that many youth, you know, they bought the way that Ben-Gvir tried to sell himself to them as a very nice guy, that he wants to warn us from the Palestinians. All of them are mitabdim, mechablim, all of them are
terrorists.
So it's terrorists. And you know, people, most of the people, the youth in Israel, they didn't meet with Palestinians. They don't know how Palestinians are look like, you know, they are behind the wall, they don't care, they don't see any horizon. So they are enthusiastic from the way that Ben-Gvir succeeded to sell themselves to, you know, to the youth. So I think our role is to warn from such a Kahanist person that he really adapted Kahana's, you know, the late Kahana agenda against Arabs, Jews.
And it's not surprising this politic is coming from a structure of occupation where Jews are supreme to their Palestinian neighbors under the law. So that type of structure produces this type of politics of supremacy and racism, because they, you know, that's the structure they live under. It's normal under occupation to, so now it's threatening Israeli society. One of the arguments we keep making is that the occupation is not going to stay in the occupation, it's going to come into Israel, it's going to threaten all of us because of this type of these type of dynamics.
But you know, I think the occupation, it's not going to come, it's already here, because for many, many years, more than a decade, we criticized Netanyahu for his policy and everyone that was against his policy regarding the settlement or regarding the occupation. He was considered as a traitor. So Netanyahu divided the people between loyalists and traitors. So, and he had to crush almost every institution that criticized him, the Supreme Court, academia, the free media, because they criticized him for his policy in the territories. So it's here, it's not going to be here, it's here. The penetration was very, you know, after 55 years, you can see how it penetrated to the Israeli society.
And undermining its very democracy, which is at stake right now. We have a bunch of questions about the other very important part of this election, which is the Arab vote. The turnout of the Arab vote will decide, as one of the factors that will decide the coalition. And the question we have is, does Meretz expect to get a chunk of the Arab vote? Definitely encouraging it. The separation of Balad from the joint list and the implication of that. So from your perspective, what do you think is going to happen with the Arab vote, and what's the responsibility now to obviously encourage Arab citizens to vote?
I think it's very hard to estimate, but I'll try, you know, it's only those are my feelings, because as I told you earlier, Almost every day, I visited Arab villages, and I met with different people, local people, and leaders of the joint list, and you know, after the split. So, I believe that although now the rate of the number of voters that would join the elections is very low, I believe that, let's say, in the last 2 weeks, it will increase. And I can't imagine that Hadash and Tal and Ram, I'm sure that Ram will, you know,
pass.
Will pass. Yes, no doubt of that. I can't imagine that that Hadash and Tal wouldn't pass the threshold. I believe that at least they will get 4 seats. I am not sure about Balad. It's very hard to estimate. There are many assumptions about them. And most of the people say that they won't pass the threshold, but they are so angry about what happened to them. I don't want to intervene into the Arab politics, but I believe that there is a chance for Meretz also to get voters from the Israeli Arab citizens. I hope that we get a mandate, but I'm not sure about that. It's very hard, you know, because the atmosphere is so frustrated, people are so frustrated. So the atmosphere is that even people that support Meretz, they say, I had many Arabs say, they told me, Zehava, what is the difference between Lapid and the Bibi? They're the same. And I'm trying to convince them that we're not talking about Bibi at the as he was last time, it's Bibi with Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, so they don't care. But I hope that the work that many organizations in the civil society and the work that they do right now in order to encourage the voters to go to vote, I hope that it will help.
Thank you. We have a question about Ukraine. You've been public about asking for more Israeli assistance to the Ukrainians against the Russian aggression, especially the Iron Dome missile system. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on Ukraine, how it plays out in Israel, this debate about how much to get involved in this war?
You know, a year ago, I published, I think it was a year ago, I don't remember exactly when was it, when it started. I published an article and I called, and I was interviewed about that, I called the Israeli government to support Ukraine. And Bennett was the prime minister, and he said he tries, you know, to, on one hand, to support Putin, but on the other hand, to support Ukraine. So Lapid condemned the Russian and Bennett supported him. I couldn't stand it. And I figured that our obligations, first of all, as Jews, our obligation is to talk against Putin, to condemn him. And it's not enough to condemn him. And Lapid yesterday condemned them, the missiles attack on Kyiv. But I think it's not enough to condemn. I think that we have to support them, to help them. The Americans, they wanted to deliver the iron, Kipat Barzel, the iron,
iron dome.
The Iron Dome, and Bennett put veto on it. And I don't know if it's going to help, but we need to help them. And I know people told me, but we have interest in Syria, and Putin is very, you know, he controls Syria. So I said, okay, I think that we're strong enough to handle our interest in Syria. And always during the Second World people said, we have interest, states like Schweiz, how do you say Schweiz?
Switzerland.
Switzerland.
Neutral.
Yes, we prefer to be neutral. I think, and we couldn't forget that, and we didn't forget it till now. So I understand that we have interest, but I think that it's our moral obligation to be part of the West that cares about what's going on there. I can't, you know, I can't see the pictures. I can't, but people, you know, they get used to it, you know, so it's so hard to see. So we get used, we don't care. It's not our problem. I think it's terrible. And lucky we are that we don't have Bibi in power right now, because we know that how the way that he supported Putin, he was part of the group or the bloc together with Orban, Duterte and others that, you know, unbearable.
Yeah, and the rise of that politics, and as Jews, looking at the rise of authoritarianism and intolerance
exactly
on that level, it just brings back, you know, all our people went through. There is a question about the decision not to go with Labor, to go separately, which I think ends up being a good decision so far. So there's a question about why you decided to go separate ways with Labor. If you can just touch on that.
When I was elected to be the head of Meretz, I said that my mission is to build a pro-democratic bloc. So I would be ready, and my party, they supported me, I would be ready to be part of a bloc, a small bloc, the Labor Party in Meretz, in order not to lose votes, because we were afraid and we were considered that one of the parties might not pass the threshold. Merav Michaeli insisted against it. I even said that I don't care. We were six seats, we were in the poll six seats and she was five seats. And I said, I don't care even to be number two. I don't insist to be number one, as long as it might save the bloc. Merav Michaeli had her thoughts and she was against it. And I said, okay, I'm very confident with with Merit. So if we want to merge together, so I know that my mission now is to empower Merit to make Merit a bigger party. So we'll see. Hopefully, it was a kind of himur, how do you say?
A gamble.
Yes, it was a kind of a gamble. But let's see, hopefully that both of us will be strong enough to be part of the pro-democratic bloc.
There's another question about the Israeli electorate behavior on the issues like cost of living. You know, Meretz has been championing, you know, cost of living issues, raising the minimum wage. Yet a lot of the communities who struggle with the cost of living do not vote Meretz. Obviously, the Mizrahi community is one such community. And if you could touch about that a little bit, explain to us the kind of the how does the Israeli electorate think about issues like minimum wage or cost of living issues that are really dominating a lot of the discussion?
I must admit that it's very frustrating in a way, because when we legislated bills in the parliament, we didn't care whether they're going to help this group or other group. You know, our agenda is a universal one. It's not a sectorial, is it all? It's not a
sectorial, yeah.
Sectorial one. Okay. So, but we understand that we have a complicated agenda, because on the one hand, we support the raise of the minimum wage. We support a regulation on housing, on, you know, the way that you can buy a building or a house or renting a house. But so this is one issue. So we support civil equality, and we support economic equality, and we support justice. But on the other hand, I don't think that it's on the other end, but at the same time, maybe we support ending the occupation. And it's very hard for people, you know, to have the combination of those issues. We support separating religion from politics,
church and state,
state and
synagogue,
religion, synagogue. We support equality for the Arabs in Israel. We support ending the occupation. And on the other hand, we support also all the right things. You know, so for many people in Israel, it's very hard to combine those issues. But we don't give up, and we are not going to change our agenda, and we're not going to change our policy. And we understand that it's very hard to convince that there is a connection, there is a line between the fact that we don't have enough money for social services, because most of the money is transferred, let's say not most, but some of the money is transferred for holding the occupation or maintaining the occupation. So it's very hard to explain it, but we are here and we don't give up.
That's great. So we have a question about the relationship with the American Jews. I would expand it into not just over this election, but in general with the relationship with American Jewish community, progressives, and Israeli progressives, a relationship that definitely needs cultivating. You gave an incredible speech, a keynote speech at J Street's conference a few years ago, which I was. It was incredible. So, kind of, you know, we just talked before we started this conversation about the Haaretz in English homepage right at this moment that's criticizing the Jewish establishment for not speaking out against Ben Gvir and the rise of Kahanism and racist Jewish supremacist politics in Israel, like they did in 2019. They're basically saying none of our business in a sense. They're declined to even comment to the report. How do you see that relationship between, you know, I know it's complicated, the American Jewish progressives and Israeli progressives that also often see things a little differently, but, you know, need each other to fight both some of the aspects of the Jewish establishment here. We're fighting to be more critical against the occupation, to be more forcefully defending Israeli democracy and Israeli progressives. We know we often, you know, look to you to see, you know, what is the state of progressive politics in Israel, and how we plug into that and how we help. And specifically this election, what should the American Jewish community do?
Okay, from my point of view, it's for me, it's very important for me, for us, to know that we have supporters, that we have you, that we have other people that support our politics. It's very hard, you know, to combat all the right wingers, you know, the tactics that they use, you know, the way that they act. So it's so important to know that we have people outside that support our goals, that support our mavakim, how they say that, our struggles. And it's also disappointing to know that there are some organizations that they are cowards, you know, like those that you just mentioned, because Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, they are not legitimate from my point of view. Not talking about Noam, you know, Avi Maoz, the group that they are that they have an agenda against the LGBT community, against women. They are so conservative, but it's much more. I don't know even how to categorize them. It's not even conservative. They're lunatics.
Yeah.
Hate group, but they are lunatics in a way. You know, they are lunatics. So they're not right-wingers. They're not right-wingers. I think it's fine. It's okay. We're used to fight against right-wingers. It's legitimate, you know. It's part of the legitimate competition to have leftists, centrists, and right-wingers. We're talking about a group, especially Ben-Gvir and Smotrich. As you mentioned, their goal is to have Jewish supremacy here. That's what in
That's their engine, that's their appeal in sense to their
exactly. So I would expect that Jewish organizations, even more conservative organizations, would say something. It's not the Israel, I believe that it's not the Israel that you know that they thought about, and so we are going to be like Trump. I don't know the people, you know. Few days ago I was interviewed and they said that I have the feeling that it's like in the 6th of January, like in the breaking to
the Capitol.
The Capitol, you know, I really felt that it's the same situation, all the incitement of Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, and it's unbearable. And how come that they don't say anything? So lucky we are that we have you, and lucky me that I can now speak in front of you and tell you about the things that bothers us.
Absolutely. So we have probably time for one more question. I'm thinking how we should end. you know, there are some questions about the other possibility of, I don't want to end on that note of Bibi and Ben-Gvir winning. I don't want to end on that note, but it is within the realm of a possibility. Obviously, I encourage anyone on this call, call your relatives in Israel, tell them to go vote Meretz. We need a very strong Meretz to prevent that from happening. And I guess if you have any last thoughts, maybe we'll end with that, about the state of progressive politics in Israel. It seems like it's moving a step forward by including an Air Party in the coalition for the first time, and then moving a couple of steps back. And the, obviously the brutality of the occupation is just unbearable to see. maybe some of your last thoughts about the future of progressive politics, maybe what we can hope for from Israeli Progressive Jewish Arab Partnership in the future.
I believe that really that if Meretz is, let me put it in a different way. I believe that we can form a government. I don't want even to think about the option that Netanyahu would be in power. But I believe that that if we have six seats, we'll have 61 for Lapid's government. So now it really depends, first of all, on us, you know, to call the Israeli public, to convince them to vote for us. But I think really it makes a change by having 61. So now it's very tight, you know, between those two blocks. But if we have six, we'll bring the Arabs parties, even the ultra-Orthodox parties, like the, let's say, the Ashkenazi Haredim, they might be partners. I'm not sure we have problems with them, but I can't even imagine that Netanyahu is going back to power. I won't let it. We won't let it, together with you. Really call your friends in Israel. Write them emails. Meretz is the party for them.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for Toda Zava, for sharing your time during this busy campaign and being with us. We're rooting for you and inspired by you. So thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Toda lachem.
Toda. Toda Zava.
Toda Ron.
Hatzlacha.
Toda. Toda Rabba Zava. Thank you, Zahava and Gili. Batzlacha b'bchirot. Good luck in the elections. Thanks to everyone who joined us today for an inspiring and fascinating conversation. Thanks to my colleague, Dinesh, who's been behind the scenes making this discussion happen. We all hope you enjoyed the webinar. For those who missed the opening, I'll just mention again, Partners for Progressive Israel is holding its annual Israel-Palestine Symposium. It's gonna be over 7 Sundays starting on October 23rd. These are limited participation groups so that people have an opportunity to engage with one another. Unlike our webinar here today, audience will be able to see each other and speak with the speakers. So I encourage you all to take a look at that at progressiveisrael.org and check out the Israel Symposium tab. Last but not least, today's program has been free, but generous contributions would enable the organization to deliver these events at no cost. So while you're looking at the Israel Symposium, Israel-Palestine Symposium on progressiveisrael.org, check out the upcoming programming, of course, and if you can, make a generous donation. Thank you to everyone. Please stay informed. Moedim l'simcha, chag sameach, and see you next time.